is Jared of the GM on ESPN 102.5. The game, Titans and Colts on Sunday. The Titans just sent this to me, and I think it's important to definitely get it out there. Fans on Sunday at the Titans-Colts game are invited to participate in the team's annual LP Pencil Box School Supply Drive by donating new school supplies prior to the game. Volunteers will be positioned outside Nissan Stadium to collect items such as pencils, markers, notebook paper, art supplies, construction paper, notebooks, backpacks, and classroom cleaning supplies. All donations will stock the LP Pencil Box, a teacher supply store that allows Metro Nashville public teachers to shop for their classrooms for free. So we hope that everybody, if you're thinking about it, or if you've got, maybe if you work at an office where y'all got some supplies in the back, you could take on over there for Metro Nashville teachers to stock their classrooms with. I'm sure that everybody over there would absolutely love it. So I wish there was more we could do, honestly, to get behind the pencil drive and the different drives the Titans have. And I know we do a lot with the Predators and the drives that they have over the course of the year. But to me, I guess that's kind of a big deal. So I just wanted to shout that out.
It is a big deal. They've supported Pencil, the organization, for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
They've been partners. So that's worked out well for everybody, I'm sure.
You going to take a pack of pens to the game with you?
No.
Well, maybe you should.
That I was on the board of Pencil for years.
And why aren't you on the board anymore?
Because I got fired.
Because once your GM, yeah, no one wants you anymore. Well, we still want you. And we want three up, three down on this Fireball Hot Take Friday. Three things the GM wants to see. Three things the GM does not want to see. On Sunday against the Colts, we start with what the GM wants to see. What's the first thing you got to see against Indianapolis?
Number one, no surprise to anybody in the football world, stop the run. And two things I think we're going to have to really, really improve on to be effective doing this. We've got to be really, really disciplined in our gap responsibilities, and we've got to tackle. I mean, we have not been the tackling team that we need to be. I mean, I've seen games where we've gone into it, tackled very, very well. We haven't tackled well in preseason, and I didn't think we tackled well last week. So stop the run with discipline and tackling.
I was stunned at how I didn't think the Titans did a poor job of tackling against Cleveland. Mike Vrabel did not like the tackling in that game on Sunday against Cleveland. You miss some tackles here, it'll be like the Texan game last year when Lamar Miller went 97 yards because they didn't tackle him.
Well, and especially with this running back, and then if it's like Hilton or somebody like that, you miss one, he's out of there.
Number two.
Second thing for me is continue to expand the offense. And we talked about this a little bit just a few minutes ago. But Arthur, I really liked what he did right off the bat. It was a great start. And now I would like to see him to expand that a little bit so that there's a little bit more disbursement to what we're doing with the ball. I mean, when you think about it, you go out there and you score 43 points and your starting receiver, number one receiver from that standpoint, doesn't have a catch. And the slot that you just paid a ton of money has one catch for 5 yards. And you're thinking, well, where did the rest, who did the rest of it? And so we've got to get not just those guys, but everybody involved. We're going to have a good crew of receivers. We need to get those guys all involved and expand the offense along those lines.
Do you have any expectation for A.J. Brown to pick up kind of where he left off? Or do you think that we should kind of, temper ourselves with A.J.'s performance?
Because it was only three catches. Yeah, that was three catches for 100 yards. You're not going to get that every week. So I would, I think he's – I mean, it'd be nice if he's going to be the X receiver. That's great. Be that guy. Go in there. I mean, he's obviously one of those guys that you can get the slant to and he can take off with it. And that's what you really like.
Number three.
Third thing for me is we have to continue the turnover edge, which we had last week, and we have to continue the penalty edge. Those are two areas that on a weekly basis, you're going to hear me harp about, and it's It's easy. I mean, turnovers, everybody's going to talk about the turnovers. And, you know, you've got to be better and this and that and the other. And we all know that. That's no surprise. The penalty is often overlooked. And I think even a team like Cleveland overlooked it until last week. And now I bet they spent the entire week emphasizing the heck out of it. So, you know, we just saw a great example of what happens if you don't do a good job with penalties.
And I would agree, and I would just say that don't expect 180 yards out of Frank Reich's team, because Frank Reich's a pretty good coach. That takes us to the three things that GM does not want to see.
Number one.
I think we have to eliminate the misfires, especially on offense. And we were just talking about this again a minute ago. You know, Marcus throwing a ball to Tajay Sharpe that he obviously has a pretty good feel for, relationship with, and miss him by 5 yards. I mean, that's just inexcusable. And I think we're gonna have to put the ball on. When you start throwing the ball like inside the tight end patterns, seams and those kinds of things, that may be Marcus's favorite throw, in my opinion. When you start throwing to a guy like Humphreys in the slot, and he's in there bouncing around and going back and forth and fighting to get open, you as a quarterback have to have a great feel for what he's going to do, where he's going to be when you release that ball, because, I mean, he could plant his foot in the ground and be going the opposite direction of the ball, which is the kind of thing we cannot have. So I think on offense, eliminate all of those kinds of issues. Doesn't mean you have to complete every ball, but I mean, you ought to, every ball ought to be within a certain catching radius.
I would prefer that they complete every ball.
I'm with you.
Number two.
Second thing is we've got to limit Hilton and the tight ends, especially Ebron and Doyle. Not that all of them don't get into it, but we have to eliminate, not eliminate, we need to limit those guys. They're going to catch their balls. We know that. But similar to what we did with OBJ last week, which is he went out there and he caught, I don't know, 6 or 7 passes, but it was for like 60 yards. And that's what we need to do with these guys. You know, they can go ahead and catch a couple of balls. We don't care about that, but they can't be for 70, 80 touchdowns. We have to, you know, let them go ahead and catch it, tackle them. Let's start all over. It's not the end of the world.
How about this interesting nugget from The Athletic about the tight ends and their snap count? Eric Ebron played 55% of the Colts' offensive snaps in 2018, but in games where Jack Doyle played, Ebron's snap counts tended to be lower. Doyle ended up having a bit of a lost season last year, missing 10 games, so Ebron played more. Now with Doyle healthy, da-da-da-da. Ebron on Sunday against the Chargers played 25 snaps, 40% of the offensive snaps against the Chargers. I will sign up for 40% of the snaps right now. If I'm Reich, I play Ebron 90% of the snaps against the Titans.
Well, I think part of it is, you know, how many times you go multiple tight ends, too. And I have no idea what the answer is.
I know, but
is.
I put Ebron in the game over Doyle.
I probably would, too.
I mean, Ebron is a Titan killer.
Yeah.
Doyle is just, you know, a nice little player. And that takes us to the final thing, the GM.
Number three.
Third thing for me is we have to forget last week. Forget it. That should already have been said 1,000 times, and it shouldn't even be a thought on people's minds. But I know it is, and I'm talking to us as much as anybody. You know, the things we saw last week, we're not going to see this week. Doesn't mean you can't win. Doesn't mean you can't play well. Doesn't mean you can't be really proud of the outcome, but, you know, 43-13 is not going to happen very often. And so we just need to get back to the real world here.
You don't think 43-13 is going to be the final?
No. Nah.
Well, we'll see what you think at Six Pack Picks. 615-737-1025. Again, reminder, the pregame show, 9:30, live from the George Jones on 2nd Avenue. We hope to see everybody there. Let's take a quick call before we get to Floyd's story time. Thank you for calling Ryan, who's up next on Marcus Mariota. Go ahead, Ryan.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Hey.
Quick question for you. After watching, you know, training camp, preseason, and then last week in Cleveland, it seems like most people agree that one area that Mariota really needs to improve on is his timing and his confidence on his throws and fitting that ball into a tight window, you know, trusting the receiver will be where he needs to be after the break and getting the ball out before he does. Traditionally in the preseason, first team offense doesn't get many reps, but do you feel like maybe that was a missed opportunity that he didn't play more to build on that confidence and that timing, or do you think that they were just focusing on getting him healthy and making sure he starts the season? And then how long do you really think it should take for a quarterback to build that confidence up and be where he needs to be? And I can listen off there. Thanks,
Thank you for the call.
Well, it depends on the receiver, of course, and I think we saw a great example of it last week. You know, he's probably thrown less passes to A.J. Brown than anybody on that offense, and yet, you know, A.J. catches 3 for 100 yards. So, you know, the type pattern you're throwing, who you're playing, the type defense you're facing, all those kinds of things have ramifications and effect on where you throw the ball. You know, Marcus is better. If Marcus can get the ball off in time, he's been successful. When he drops back and his back foot plants, he shuffles, ball's gone, everything's fine. It's when it's double clutched, or when he holds on to it, or when he gets hesitant because he knows the rush is coming. He knows his offensive line is young. And so I think he feels pressured, and he, you know, gets to a point where he says, okay, I got to let it go, and he just goes ahead and rips it. And half of the time it misses a target, and half the time it misses a target ugly. I mean, it's a bad pass. So I just think he's got to get past all of that stuff.
Coming. Let me turn on my mic. Coming up next on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. We're doing this because Sunday is for Steve McNair and Eddie George. But coming up next, Floyd story time. What made him want to draft Eddie George and Steve McNair? Take us through that. That's what we'll do next. We're live from the Game Nashville studios, we are live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. One other little note on the Titans school supply drive. Someone told me, bring dry erase markers. So that is, I guess, on the list as well. Be sure to bring all that stuff. Jared of the GM, it's ESPN 102.5, The Game.
The Titans have had a guiding hand for years in Steve McNair. In 2002, he showed he's still growing and getting better. McNair leads by example. And this Mississippi country boy showed dedication, hard work, and sacrifice. He demonstrated elusiveness and heart, despite numerous injuries that took him out of practice for 41 days at the end of the season. There was no question Steve McNair would be on the field come game day. Throughout those injury-riddled weeks, McNair guided the Titans to an undefeated December. This fierce competitor put himself on the line and refused to let his team down. Arguably the league's most irreplaceable player, McNair was overlooked everywhere except for the Mid-South.
That was from the 2002 Titans yearbook. Steve McNair finished third in the MVP that year and would later go on to win the MVP along with Peyton Manning in 2003. One man made the choice to draft Steve McNair. Is that correct? It was a one-person decision.
Oh, no. I mean, there are a lot of people that discussed it.
But at the end of the day, one person said, I'm going with him.
Right.
And that was you. Eddie George, a year later, the Titans trade down, trade back up, Eddie George to the Titans. Take us through the decision, Floyd Reese, on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Take us through the decision to draft Steve McNair and Eddie George.
Well, with Steve, it was unique because of where he came from. You know, I mean, he came from Alcorn State, which back then was a little bitty school, awful facilities, awful field, you know, awful everything. It was just a little bitty, tiny school. But he literally did everything. And the play, they had plays, but the plays all looked the same because it amounted to Steve in the shotgun, snap the ball to Steve. Steve either just takes off and runs with it, or they snap it to him and he starts running around until one of his receivers can get open someplace. And then wherever they get open, he would rifle the ball into them, and they would move the chains, and they would go on down. He was playing, I know I told you this, but he plays Stephen F. Austin. They hit him about 2 yards out of bounds. I mean, it was just a ridiculous hit. Knocked him over into the bench, separated his shoulder. He not only finished that game and won, but the next week was the playoffs for them. He got into the playoffs and won that game. So he had been through a bunch of stuff like that, and you just had to believe that if you could get this guy and coach him and give him some of the things that he doesn't have, that, you know, that he truly could be special. I don't think any of us, even at that time, realized how truly, truly tough he was. But he was phenomenal in the things that he could do. With Eddie, I remember, complete opposite. And this is what's so unique about these two guys. The complete opposite end of the spectrum. He's at Ohio State. You go to his pro day in this multi-million dollar facility, and they've got maybe 3 or 4 or 5 guys that are going to be really, really high draft choices. Terry Glenn was a receiver. I can't remember who the other guys were, but they had several guys that were big time, and they had been a big time team. I don't know what they'd won, but they'd won a bunch. So there are like 300 or 400 or 500 people in this facility, a few students and managers and whatnot, and then a lot of GMs and coaches and scouts, and so they're running their 40s, and they say, okay, Eddie George. And when you watch the building, literally everybody in the building stopped just to watch Eddie run. And when he did that, I thought, wow, that's something, you know, because all these other big name guys, none of that was happening. So I can remember we go to the vertical jump, and there's a whole group of people around this vertical jump, and they would call these other guys, and they would kind of wind their way through, step up, vertical jump, okay, you know, it's whatever, they announce it. Then they said, Eddie George, and the crowd parted. People moved back and got out of his way so that he could walk in, do his vertical jump. I can't remember what it was, but it was pretty good. But when you saw that kind of relationship he had with not only his own teammates, but with everybody in the crowd, and even the people that didn't know him, he just had that certain aura about him. And I can remember when we left, I told my director of personnel then, I said, you know what? I don't know what the good Lord has meant for him. You know, I don't know if he's supposed to gain 1,200 or 2,000, but whatever the good Lord is going to let him gain, he'll gain, because he's that kind of guy. Now, it was interesting because after the draft, I remember with Steve, I had a buddy of mine call me right after the draft, and he says, wow, that was a gutsy call. And for the first time, it had dawned on me that, you know, maybe I messed that up. Because he was so curious about, you know, that took a lot of gut. And in my world, my mind, I was completely sold. There was absolutely no doubt. I mean, I said, this is the guy. I know this is the guy. But as soon as he threw that out there, it kind of put a little bit of doubt in my mind. Then after the Eddie call, the same guy called back, or after the Eddie pick, same guy called back the next year and said, oh, I bet you think you're really smart, don't you? He goes, you go out there, you draft a 6'3", 240-pound running back that can run like a deer, and you think you've done something really special. And I thought, yeah, I feel pretty good about this one, too.
What's funny about the special part of the Eddie George pick was that it wasn't like you went into the draft saying, oh, I just have to have Eddie, or at least not outwardly, because you had the 9th pick in the draft. You traded that to Oakland. So you moved from 19 to 17. In exchange, you got Oakland's second and fourth.
Yeah.
You got Oakland's second and fourth. Now, I believe that fourth became John Runyon,
right,
who was an all-pro right tackle for the Titans. So with one trade, you got an all-pro running back and an all-pro right tackle. You then later traded from 17 to 14 with Seattle, with along with Glenn Montgomery, in order to move up three spots. Was Glenn Montgomery good?
You know what? He was. I mean, I really liked him.
Maybe one day, George.
God rest his soul. I mean, he died like 2 years later.
That's tough.
Yeah.
So you trade him and you trade up with Seattle and you draft Eddie George at 14. So you went into that day. You could have had Eddie at 9, didn't. And then you were able to get Eddie at 14. Going into that draft, was your whole plan built around moving down to get Eddie?
Well, I mean, we wanted Eddie. I think the plan was, you know, we needed a lot of picks, too. We needed quality.
Because y'all did kind of suck.
So the thing was, where can you go and still get him? And so we went to 16, like you said, and I just didn't feel comfortable at 16. I just didn't feel comfortable because a guy named Tim Biakabatuka, who was a running back out of Michigan, went like
eighth.
And then the running back from Nebraska went like, what, 12th or something?
Phillips went sixth. So Lauren Phillips went sixth.
Okay.
And
sixth
then Biakabatuka went eight. And you were at 9 and it traded down.
And I kept thinking to myself, oh, my God. You know, there's too many picks in between there. Somebody's going to take them. I know that. So I tried to move up with everybody, couldn't do it, and finally got Seattle. They let me move up a couple, and I don't know if anybody would have taken them at 14 or 15 or not, but I wasn't going to risk it.
Did you go into the day thinking you were going to trade out of 9 but still get Eddie George?
I mean, that was perfect for us.
So you know, if a Simeon Rice had slipped to 9, would you have said Keyshawn?
No.
Ogden?
We like Jonathan, but I mean
you had Brad Hopkins,
and we just drafted. We ended up getting Runyon a little bit later.
Was
so
obviously an All-Pro tackle.
He was pretty good too.
Was there a moment with Steve McNair where you said, "I'm sold. This guy has won me over," or with Eddie? You know, I think, Eddie, you kind of told the story about the pro day, but is there a moment with Steve where you said, sign me up?
This is what I found out about myself, and I didn't really realize this until some point in time later on when I was thinking about it. I would sit down with both of those guys. I can remember Eddie's more because we did a better job of making the tape. I made this tape of what we call point of attack tape, and what you do is you show the good and the bad, so that you have a thumbnail sketch of this player. And I kept having him add to it and add to it and add to it. And when you sit down, like at that point in time, everything was on tape. You sit down, I mean, you may have 70 tapes that you're going to look at over a weekend, for example. And I found myself about every 15 tapes, I would reach over and grab that 80 tape and throw it in. And I'd watch it again. And I would do the year before the same thing with Steve. I'd plop it in and I'd watch it again. I'd plop it out and put it back down.
Was that like a song? Like a song that gets stuck in your head? You're like, I just go back to this song.
Yeah,
I just kept this song.
You know, it was almost like I was going through and comparing these other tapes of these other guys. And then I would throw this back in and go, nope, I like that one better. You know, let's keep that one. And so I think, you know, indirectly, I kind of went through and tried to compare them to a zillion guys, and in my mind, they were both better than anything that was out there.
The two greatest Titans, Eddie George, Steve McNair, and we talked about this earlier. Very rare, nobody is bigger than the team, but sometimes guys are the team. Tom Brady is the team in New England. Steve McNair and Eddie George, I think, are the two guys of this franchise who nobody would dispute were the team.
Well, and similar to Tom from this standpoint, and they're going through this a little bit now with their AB situation. I mean, Tom was the guy in that locker room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people walked into that locker room, they watched Tom. Well, that was Steve and Eddie for us. You know, when people would walk into that locker room and bring somebody new in there, they would look and see what Steve and Eddie were doing. And of course, they were always, you know, it was always having to do with teammates or buddies or
something. So coming up next, what I really want to know is how. How did Steve McNair and Eddie George make the Titans great? What did they do specifically? We'll get to that coming up next with Floyd's Storytime. Again, be sure to join us for the pregame show, 9:30 to 11:30. We will have a segment of the pregame show to talk about Steve McNair and Eddie George. Chris Sanders played with Eddie in college at Ohio State and, of course, played with him here with the Titans. He'll be with us at the George Jones, 9:30. So I think a big deal will be 9:30 to 11:30. We hope to see everybody out there. And we hope to see everybody come on out and see us as we are out there before the game. That's next. Jared and the GM. Fireball Hot Take Friday. Love Fireball. Cinnamon whiskey goes down so smooth and tastes so great. There's not a weekend where you can't just say, okay, I got to go get the Fireball Cinnamon whiskey. Why? Because Fireball is the best. That's right. The absolute best. Ice cold Fireball Cinnamon whiskey goes down so smooth and tastes so great. Ignite the night. Please do it responsibly and be 21 years or older to enjoy. Fireball Cinnamon whiskey. Jared of the GM. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How much responsibility do you feel to Steve's legacy, given that he's not here? And what's it mean to go in or have this honor together with him?
I don't know so much of responsibility. It's my calling. I think responsibility is something that you have to do. My calling is something that I want to do, and I'm aligned to do. It's within my spirit to do. And, you know, Steve is always going to be my teammate till the day I die. And anytime that I can talk about his legacy and share with people the type of player he was, the type of man he was, the type of leader that he was, in the physical form, you have to do that because it can change a life. It can spark inspiration. It can ignite somebody to do great things. You know, just talking to a young man just now, AJ, in terms of what he's experiencing now, what he wants to accomplish. I can go back and draw on some of the experiences I had my personally and with Steve to say, hey, you have hope. Calm down. It's week one. You know, I've been there. Just relax. Trust me. You're going to say, that's week one. Dad, it's 16. When does it end? You know, so just it's okay. So Steve will always always have a place in my heart. And anytime I have a chance to raise him up and to talk about and highlight the great things that he's done in this community, on this team, what he's meant to the NFL, period, I'm going to do just that.
Eddie George talking about Steve McNair. Floyd, story time. We all want to know, as they honor Steve and Eddie this weekend, as we said, nobody is bigger than the team, but sometimes people are the team. Steve and Eddie were the team during their most successful tenure as Titans. Why? What did they do that made the Tennessee Titans great?
Well, I mean, it was odd because they were both from completely different backgrounds, as I mentioned before. I mean, you're talking about a true, true country kid. I mean, from way back country. And you're talking a city kid. Kid that was, you know, born and raised in Philadelphia, was going to school at Ohio, both, you know, different schools, different backgrounds, different environments. Literally, I mean, I can't think of anything they had in common until it came to football. And when it came to football, those guys were brothers. I mean, they both played the same way. They both played with the same intensity. They both played. And I think that brought them closer. I think they had tremendous respect for each other because they knew that no matter what, it's like you've heard me say with Eddie. I mean, Eddie never missed a game, never missed a practice, never. He was just there all the time. And Steve was the same way, you know, except for the times that he legitimately had injuries. But the players, Eddie saw him play through so many injuries and saw him able to overcome so many things that they became, I mean, it was like they were breathing the same air. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a giant part of it, because, like you said, you know, at that point in time, way back when, you would say, okay, who's the face of the franchise? Well, Steve McNair and Eddie George. What kind of guys are those? Here's the kind of guys they are. And all of a sudden, what are you going to do? You know, Bruce Matthews and I think Eddie said this last week, Bruce Matthews was a big part of that. Because Bruce, although he wasn't as vocal and wasn't, you know what, Bruce was, you know, one of the best offensive linemen to ever play in the NFL and with anybody. I mean, he was outstanding. But Bruce would never miss. Bruce was there every game. Bruce was our starting left tackle, made the Pro Bowl, left guard, made the Pro Bowl, center, made the Pro Bowl, was our long snapper and our short snapper and our backup kicker and backup punter. I mean, that's what he could do. And never complain. Every Pro Bowl, I don't even remember how many Pro Bowls are all Pro. He never ever came to me and said, hey, can I get off of the punt team? Never. Can I get out of the, you know, snapping for field goals? Never. I mean, he felt like, and that kind of attitude permeated the locker room. And so these guys came along and saw that, and they were kind of that way anyway. And I think there, you know, from that point in time, it was gone. I mean, it was a way of life for us.
That's funny. Your son, Sean, tweeted me and said, don't forget Bruce.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. So I think there's a lot to be said about that. I mean, it's so funny that the Titans had the success they had in the early 2000s. And everybody remembers Steve McNair and Eddie George. They had some great players on those teams.
We had
just
great
defense
teams.
And, and it's like I liken it to right now. You know, we played the highlights from the 99 AFC title game, and Eddie Robinson forces a key fumble in that game. And you were talking about Eddie Robinson a couple weeks ago off the air, and you said nobody on TV would talk about Eddie Robinson, but everybody in that facility thought, oh, Eddie Robinson is the man.
Oh, yeah. Eddie, I mean, he was.
And that's how I feel about Vaccaro now, is nobody talks about Vaccaro, but I bet you inside there, they're like, oh, yeah, Kenny is the man.
Well, Eddie was one of those guys. I mean, Eddie could make every call. Eddie was a coach, a real coach. I mean, he could make every call. He knew every defense. If there was a signal to be had, he had it. If there was a key on somebody on the offense, he got it. I mean, he was a brilliant. He was like a chemistry major or something like that. I mean, he was a brilliant guy. Great, great football player.
I do wonder what, you know, the crowd reaction tomorrow is. Sunday, I hope, is through the roof. I do wonder, you know, when the next Steve McNair or Eddie George is going to come along.
Yeah, hopefully they're there now. Whoever that might be, you know, can it be Derrick Henry?
I hope it's Derrick Henry.
You know, can it be?
It's not going to be Marcus.
Any of those guys? Yeah, I mean, Marcus probably won't be the same as Steve, but it doesn't mean he can't be a, you know, have a tremendous legacy. But I think there's, you know, there's going to be a group of guys that'll come out of there.
I got my hat handed to me last week in six-pack picks.
Oh, are we going to go to six-pack picks?
I have got to do better this weekend. I don't even know what games we're picking Ian doesn't know.
I have them ready right here. Thank you very much.
I tried to get this to get you to talk about this all week long, but you ignored me.
Next,
the whole time.
Six-pack picks. Jared and the GM. Authentically American. Everybody knows how much we love rocking our Authentically American gear. Your business will love it too. Not only will it show your company's logo and look fantastic, but it also will be a better product than what you're already buying, because everything from Authentically American is made in the USA. Polos, jackets, hats, Oxford socks, vests, whatever your business needs, Authentically American can do with made in the USA products. It's also competitively priced with what your company is already buying for their apparel. So get with the American company that honors the American worker and celebrates patriotism and honors the American hero by donating 10% of their profits to first responder and veteran charities. Authentically American, the next iconic brand that is truly American-made. Authentically American online at AuthenticallyAmerican.us. Jared and the GM. Fireball Hot Take Friday. Six-pack picks next. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, let's just be real with the people. It was a bad week for me in six-pack picks. I do not know what the games are this week. It was a great week for the GM. Now that we've glossed over that, it's time for us to move on to making the picks for this week.
Do we have the scores?
We're already glossing over that?
No, that was very quickly. We need some scores here.
Yes. Floyd, last week, 5-1.
5-1.
Back on the winning track, now 7-6 on the season. Jared's 2-4. Last week brings him to 4-10 on the season.
Ooh-wee. 4-10.
Digging myself an early hole. Not pretty.
Okay.
Ian, let's fire her up, baby.
All right, we will start with the game of the week, 2:30 CBS, right here. 11,
this is a pathetic game of the week, but keep going.
11:30 94.9 game two, the Bama Radio Network and Eli Gold.
Oh, we have it. Great game.
Great game. Alabama at South Carolina, and Bama is -25.5. Who goes first, Floyd?
Oh, let Jared take that one.
They're going to kill him. Alabama, 25. Give it to me, baby. South Carolina, S-U-C-K, sucks. Alabama rolls, roll tide, roll 25, give it to me.
Wasn't this some of the stuff that we heard last week?
Oh, yes, we had two outright wins that were incorrect by Jared last week.
All right, I pick Alabama to win this game outright, too, by the way. Just FYI, for those keeping score at home, I take Alabama to win this game outright.
0-2 in the outrights.
Texas and Pittsburgh.
The Steelers just, oh, God. I should be fired for that one.
Steelers.
I should be fired for
that one. You're dancing on the
table.
Holy crap. Give me the Steelers. I love the Steelers. They're going to. I'll go with Alabama, too. After all of that.
All right, I'm going to stick with this music because I do not know what channel this is on. Louisville versus WKU, Western Kentucky, 3 o'clock, Nissan Stadium, Louisville, -10.
Okay, so let me say for the record, I thought the game was at night. I just found out it was at 3 o'clock. I had no idea. I thought it was at 7 o'clock.
Well, good thing. Otherwise, you would have missed it.
I would have been late to the game. I'm supposed to be on the pregame show tomorrow, so I would have been a little bit late.
Who's favored?
Louisville by 10. I'll take the Cards. Coach Satterfield is doing the damn thing out there. It's amazing what not having Bobby Petrino be your coach and having a better coach in there has done. I love what Coach Satterfield's done. I'm taking the Cards. I think the Cards win this game by 30 points.
I'll take the Cards, too, but it has nothing to do with Louisville. It's just Western Kentucky
horrible.
Is so bad, and Hilton is not helping them.
Talk about sucks. S-U-C-K sucks.
All right, and then let's see. Florida at Kentucky, 6 o'clock, ESPN. We will join in progress on ESPN 94.9 Game 2, and Florida is -8.5.
I'll take Florida.
Taking Florida -8.5?
Yep.
So the Cats
Kentucky.
Lost their starting quarterback
yeah,
for the year.
Yeah, they got no quarterback.
I want to take the Cats. I'm going to take the Cats.
Good.
I hate Florida. I do. I hate Franks. He stinks. This is a terrible pick, but I'm doing it anyways.
A
Cats.
Louisville winner and a Kentucky winner.
Yes.
How about that?
Yes, I'm taking the Cats, and I don't even want to. But the more I just say in my head I want to take the Cats, the more I don't want to take the Cats, I will take the Cats. Let's get on to the NFL.
All right, we will start Jacksonville going to Houston, noon, CBS. I guess Jacksonville lost their quarterback, so Houston is -8.5.
I will take the Texans, and this is my worry, is that the Texans will blow out the Jags, and the Jags will be trying to salvage their season next Thursday with a short week and everything else that's to your disadvantage. So because I think the football gods always love to screw it with the Titans, I take Houston to win big time. Houston gets back on track to go to 1-1.
I have to take Houston, too. I mean, simply because they got a rookie quarterback. Some guy that's never played.
Gardner Minshew had good stats, though, on Sunday.
Good. And it's going to be hard.
This is a guy who could not put Luke Falk on the bench, by the way. If that makes you feel any better or worse.
This should be a good game. A rematch. Saints at the Rams. 325 Fox right here. ESPN 102.5 the game. And the Rams are -2.
I'll take the Rams. Simply because I saw the Saints play the other night. And Saints are, plus they're coming off Monday night. So I'll go with the Rams.
I'm going with the Saints. And if this game were in New Orleans, I'd feel very comfortable about this. I'm going to take the Saints only because I think the built-up anger and rage and everything else for what happened last year in the NFC title game, I think is going to show. Plus, I'll take the more mature quarterback in Drew Brees, who showed that he's the man again on Monday night. I'm going to go with New Orleans to win this game, and I'll take my points.
I feel 6-0 coming on.
Words I can't say on the radio.
And that brings us to the Colts curse. The Colts coming to town.
The Colts curse!
Coming to town to take on the Titans without Andrew Luck. Noon, CBS, and the Titans are minus a field goal.
Oh, I have to go first?
Yeah. -3.
This game has made me sick the whole time. I'm taking Indianapolis, and I am taking Indianapolis to win outright. I have seen the Titans do this too many times. They win week one, and everybody's feeling good about themselves, and they throw out a clunker. A clunker in week two. You want to go back to 2010. They beat the Raiders big and got smacked by the Steelers. You want to go back to 2014. They beat Kansas City. Kansas City got crushed in week two under Wisenhunt. 2015, they went to Tampa. Marcus had the greatest debut in the history of the NFL, and they lost to Johnny Manziel in Cleveland. I just know the Titans too well. I'm taking Indianapolis in the most painful way possible. Indianapolis 19, Tennessee 13. I am taking the Colts, and I am taking the points, and I am taking them to win outright, GM.
I'm taking the Titans.
Only don't flip-flop on the pregame show now like you did last week.
For all of the BS reasons he just spit out, that's why I'm taking them.
Give me at least one reason why you're taking the Titans other than me.
Well, I mean, you hit them all. I mean, they're a better team. They're going to win.
Colts 19, Titans 13. We'll see if Floyd flip-flops on the pregame show. We hope to see everybody out of the George Jones, 9:30 to 11:30. Stop on by on your way. School Supply also bring school items for the Titans school supply drive. We are out of here. Of course, again, pregame coverage beginning at 7 o'clock Sunday for Titans and Colts.